Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslowski. Is it possible to find euphoric joy in immense pain? Can you really eliminate bad days forever? I know a guy who says yes, and I can't wait for you to hear his story. This is episode number 71. Woot woot, everybody. It's super awesome that you're joining me and thousands of other Smart and Simple Matters fans for what's shaping up to be an episode that, it's all kinds of groovy. I'm really grateful that you're listening and hopeful that you'll keep your finger off the stop button unless, that is, you need to curate something important. You always have permission to pause to curate. Now, it seems that I have this geek speak on the brain right now, perhaps because I'm heading to a local event called Mini Bar this weekend where designers, developers, entrepreneur dudes and dudettes, and spreadsheet fanatics like me go to straight up nerd out. Okay, yeah, you're right. I'm always using geek speak, and I'm probably the only person who will attend Mini Bar that dreams about Microsoft Excel. This is the same event that I met Anthony Ongaro at last year, who you may remember from episode 68. Chatting that fella up was the highlight of my day, but I'm going to give you a more recent highlight. I had this comment from Wendy in Montana on the show notes to SASM 69. Let me try to keep my composure as it's time to get loose. And as I read her kind words, she wrote, "I am so grateful for the thoughtful way that you approach your podcast. You obviously do your homework about your content, your guests, and your tech. There is so much substance to your podcast and your show notes that, although I look forward to each and every new episode, I regularly go back and revisit older episodes to peruse the show notes more deeply. I love your wacky sense of humor, your sweet musical references, and your reverence for your lovely family. Thank you for making such an impact on so many of us." Gosh, Wendy, that's powerful stuff. I can only say word up to you, your words, and to Cameo, if given the chance. Maybe, did you catch that sweet musical reference right there? All right, now how's about painting the picture of what you're in for in this episode? It's a story-filled and often painful adventure that starts with my guest, Aaron Kennard, sharing how chopping off his finger in high school gave him a strong public identity. We build steam from there. He's going to share the crucial difference between pain and suffering and how one doesn't have to lead into the other. Why amazing habits start one small, simple step at a time. An easy way to get into a frenzy of gratitude. And a single seed of compassion that works with and for everyone and everything. This episode is a jaw dropper and a sizzler. So here we go. Who's excited right now? Me? You? You can definitely count me among the stoked because I have Aaron Kennard as my guest on this episode. He's the number one best-selling author of The Positive Thinking Secret and creator of The 12 Secrets to a Truly Amazing Life, his transformational framework for living. This guy is on a mission to help folks stop settling for mediocre and start living the truly amazing life that they deserve, pronto, if at all possible. You can normally find him around Boulder, Colorado, with his wife, Nan, and their four kiddos. Aaron, my man, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Joel. Good to be here.
Cool. Well, let's start where I normally start, which is something I call the seeds of awesomeness. So we can get inside your head a little bit and understand why you are the person you are today. Can you tell us one or two foundational experiences you had as a kid, or maybe even something about your environment growing up that shaped who you are right now?
You want to go clear back to when I was young?
It can be tripping over the dog when you're 4 years old and cutting your chin and then figuring out, oh boy, I need to be more careful around animals. Or it could be something that happened to you in high school. Take it wherever you want to take it.
You know, it's funny, as you just thought of, as you just said that, I just have this vivid recollection of a really, really painful experience that kind of opened me up when I was 16 years old. I actually chopped my finger off on a table saw, and I was kind of a shy kid before that. I mean, didn't have a, I don't know, I wasn't super shy, but I was on the more shy side. And then I ended up in wood shop at the end of the year, chopping my finger off on this saw, doing something really stupid. Jeez. And I kind of went into shock, and I went out, I go down to the office. I'm holding my finger like really, really tightly with my, with one of my hands. It was just my index finger. And I couldn't, when the doctor, school doctor came in to try to look at it, he couldn't pry my hand off of it because it was just, I was squeezing it so tight. I was in the shock, and he was like, I have a hard time really prying my fingers off. Anyway, I went to the hospital, got it sewed up. And that night was just the most, after the morphine wore off and whatever, just the most excruciating pain I could ever remember. Up to that point, I was just like sobbing and bawling for like 3 hours straight. It was just like this intense throbbing that nothing would stop. And then after that, it kind of eased off. I was able to go to sleep, and then it's a really painful body part to like chop all those nerve endings off in your finger and stuff. Anyway, it kind of shifted me. After that point, it gave me like this identity at school. And all of a sudden the next week, all these hot cheerleaders were like gathered around my desk, and they're like giving me all this sympathy. It just felt awesome. I was like, man, I got to chop things off more often. No, I'm just kidding. Not really, but it was really cool for about a week, and then they all forgot about me. But what it did was it kind of opened me up, got me out of my shell, and gave me this identity, this independent identity. And ever since then, it's kind of like I became a new person after that. And so it kind of shaped me in a way. That's just one small experience. And I'm not exactly sure why it made me become a new person, but it just kind of brought me out of my shell. And I think it was because it gave me that identity, some kind of independent identity that was unique to me.
When you say you're in a shell and you're a bit of a shy guy, was it that you didn't really run in the same social circles as most people in high school, or it was a little bit awkward for you to initiate conversations? As far as why you changed, we don't have to skip over that, but I'm kind of interested in how. Like, as we fast forward in a little bit, and I know you're no stranger to surgeries, we'll be talking about some other ones that you had, I'm sure, as part of your story, but how did things shift for you, at least mentally, in terms of how you connected with humans or just how you saw the world after chopping your finger off when you were 16?
It's actually hard for me to say exactly, but I think it was just that I realized that I wasn't super shy. I wasn't like the super nerdy, never talked to kids. I mean, I had my friends and we just had fun. I was just really shy around girls mostly. And I just wasn't really, that outgoing or that confident in myself. But once I had this kind of identity, like people knew me as like the finger guy, like the guy who everybody, like the principal made me stand up in front of the whole school, just like announced, and it was kind of a weird thing, but everybody then knew me as that guy who chopped his finger off, which is kind of like really dumb. But for whatever reason, it said, hey, everybody can see me and I still feel okay. And it's like, it just kind of allowed me that permission to say, hey, people see me, they acknowledge me, and now I can just be more confident in myself. So yeah,
I get that. And I also get the whole being awkward around girls in high school. It took me 2.5 years to work up the confidence to ask my first and only girlfriend out in high school. Oh man, that was just a really slow build. Fortunately, she said yes. It crashed and burned after about 6 months. But I'm really happy that I don't have to go through the mystery of dating and courting and all these things. Like, I've been happily connected with Melinda for the last 15 years. We've been married for almost 10 now. It's a wonderful thing to have that and not have to go through the whole, how do you deal with girls? Anyway, yeah. So high school, you had some bad days, especially chopping off your finger. You explained the deep pain that you were in. But I understand. Rumor around the street is you no longer have bad days. And just in case
that is curious, true.
You never have a bad day. And there's a bit of a story behind the creation of that mindset. So I would love it if you could share it with us.
Yes, that is very true. I made the decision in December, December 11th, actually 2011 is when it was, that I would never again have another bad day, and I never have. And people hear that and they say, "Yeah, right." You know, that, what I mean by that is not that I won't have hard things happen to me, and it's just more a distinction for me that I've chosen that there's no such thing as a bad day, that I don't choose to classify any day as bad. Like for me, that becomes like giving up on the day. And my whole motto became that I'm going to make today amazing, no matter what, no matter what happens, it's my choice. And so that comes from on that day, that specific day. And I'll say like ever since that day, I've had extremely hard days, which I can tell you about, but I don't consider one of them as bad. And I didn't at the time. And I don't ever say that I'm having a bad day because I feel that's disempowering, and I feel that it's settling, and I feel like that there's no reason why any of us has to settle for that, because there's always something we can do about today, right now, for the rest of the time that we have. But anyway, I'll tell you why.
Please let's take us back to December 11th, 2011.
So that particular day, I had this intensely painful sore throat. My life has these themes of pain, actually, and they're these escalating themes of pain, actually, which is kind of interesting, as I'll tell you what happened beyond that. But you know, you heard about that finger pain. That was just one of these instances of times and when I experienced extremely intense pain in life. But this time, I had this sore throat that was not going away. It was really painful. It made it hard to sleep at night, and after about 3 weeks, I had seen two different doctors. This sore throat wasn't going away, and it was just really kind of concerning, but also annoying and frustrating at the same time. And I was laying down in bed, and I just was like dreading not being able to sleep again for another night, and dealing with this every time I swallow this pain. And I just had this thought that was like, "Hey, when you swallow, just think of, and it hurts, think of five things that you're grateful for." And so I did that. I was laying there. I swallowed. I thought of five things. And all of a sudden, I started feeling a little bit better. And then I swallowed again, and it hurt really bad. So I said, "Okay, let me think of five more things." And I thought of five more things. And then it just dawned on me right then in that moment that I am in control of my thoughts and my entire life experience, and that this particular pain could be a reminder for me to express gratitude and control my thoughts. Because I'd had this thought before then. I'd been reading some Napoleon Hill books, specifically Outwitting the Devil, a couple months prior to that, which he has a statement in there that every adversity carries with it an equal or opposite advantage. And so as I had that thought in my mind a lot, and as I was going through this sore throat, I was thinking, what's the advantage to this pain? What's the advantage to this pain? But because I was asking that question instead of saying, "Oh, my life sucks, this pain sucks," or whatever. Because I was saying, "Okay, what's the advantage?" When I thought that thought to think of five things that are grateful, immediately I'm like, that's the advantage to this pain. And it dawned on me that I could find an advantage to every adversity in that moment, because I realized, hey, as long as this pain is here, I'm going to use it to serve me as like a built-in alarm clock reminder to express gratitude in my thoughts and completely transform my life in that moment. And so it was extremely empowering. I went to bed. I slept peacefully that night. The next day, I woke up on cloud nine. I had this huge grin on my face. I swallowed and felt this pain, and I was just like, "Yes, thank you for this sore throat." It was the most liberating experience, because I was still in all the pain, but my emotions were just like on cloud nine. Like they were just through the roof. And ever since that day, that was the day life became truly amazing to me. That was like, all of a sudden, I'd never had any more bad days, and I realized that I was never going to again, that I could choose, and that I could turn every single adversity into my advantage. And it actually, that's what launched me on this. It changed my whole life. It changed the whole direction, and I started to feel this really deep calling from within to share that message with other people and to help people see that they could choose not to have a bad day. And then it launched this business, The Truly Amazing Life. I launched a website called trulyamazinglife.com, started blogging and teaching and everything like that, and what came out from that was this poster that contained these 12 pillars, because I kept asking the question, why is life so amazing? Why do I feel so good every day? And it, after months of writing, it turned into this poster, which people can see if they go to the website.
Yeah, we're going to get to the poster in just a little bit. But before we do, I don't necessarily need to go in chronological order here, but developing that mindset, gratitude for pain or in the midst of pain, which to some people's ears, they're thinking to themselves, wow, like that is just an alien thought that you can be grateful for pain. And it can be a trigger, a reminder of how good life is and how content you can be with the status quo. But later in 2012, you got this diagnosis from doctors, something that they said there wasn't cure for, an autoimmune disease called Crohn's, which I've had family members who had ulcerative colitis and Crohn's in that spectrum. That is serious business. And you were even, from what I read and from what I've seen, you were losing a pound a day. Mm-hmm. You dropped from 178 pounds to 128 pounds.
Yep.
Can you keep us going on that story about
being
wheeled into the emergency room? And
yeah, that's kind of the amazing thing about how life takes you on a path and leads you exactly where you want to go through ways that you don't necessarily, you know, you wouldn't plan, you wouldn't ask for, but which are absolutely perfect. And so as I'm telling you, I had this mission. My mission became to help other people live a truly amazing life, to help other people experience what I was experiencing, that they could be in complete control of their life and their experience. And so as I was doing that, my fourth child was born, our daughter, on July 28th of that year. So this is about 6 months after I'd kind of had that epiphany in December. And the very next day, my body just shut down. After she was born, it was a really intense birth. And the very next day, my body had just shut down completely. Like all of a sudden, I started experiencing massive pain in my backside. And then, as you mentioned, over the next month, it basically just severely progressed. I was confined to my bed. I could barely walk. I was curled up in the fetal position pretty much daily with this burning in my backside. And after about a month and a half of all these doctors finally getting a diagnosis that this is, you know, an autoimmune disease that's chronic and will never go away, according to the doctors. And that was pretty challenging, hard to take in. But what I'll tell you is, because I had this mindset that there is no such thing as a bad day and that everything is conspiring for my benefit, that I knew from the moment that pain started that I was going to turn this to my advantage and that this would be here. This was absolutely here for my good. That's the mindset that I chose. And I said, and that's what I went with. And it just,
even on the day that your colon burst in five places,
and so,
many people believe that you were just totally knocking on death's door.
Yeah, so that's the fast forward. What happened over that 3 month period, what you just alluded to, is like I ended up losing 50 pounds over that 3 month period. And there were days when I was looking up at that poster and I just literally wanted to rip it off the wall because it says, this is a truly amazing life. And I'm like screaming in pain. I mean, up every 90 minutes in the night with these horrifically painful bowel movements that, I mean, it was just, I won't go into too many details because it's crazy, but you can read the book and I go into a lot of detail there. And it's essentially on the day, like 3 months in, like in November or October 27th, actually, I woke up with just this excruciating, exploding feeling in my bowels. And I was naked because I had to sleep naked at this point because literally I was completely incontinent. I was beyond wearing man diapers. I would sleep on a hospital pad because I wouldn't have no idea when my bowels would just explode in the middle of the night. And so I was constantly changing my own hospital pads. And in the middle of the night, I was sleeping in the addition to our house because it had a door that we could close off from the rest of the house. It was like an exterior sliding glass door. And I would close that so that my kids and my wife wouldn't hear me screaming all night, because literally every 90 minutes I would be like screaming in pain as I would have these exploding like movement. Anyway, and so, but that night, at like 3 a.m, I woke up where like everything felt like it was just going to burst. I started screaming and that door was closed and my wife couldn't hear anything. And luckily I had my phone by the bed and I just dialed 911 and just started screaming, help, help. And I could barely talk to them, but they were able to they were able to come, and within like 2 minutes they showed up, and I had to crawl over to the sliding glass door, and I like pried it open, and I'm still screaming, and then finally my wife hears me, and I'm crawling naked across the kitchen floor, and she comes out and just kind of freaking out, and then the ambulance, the EMTs rush in through the door and haul me off in a wheelchair, and she's just like sobbing on the couch, wondering if I'm going to die, because I literally was like 130 pounds at this point, looked like a skeleton, and just
I've seen the pictures. You do. You look like a skeleton.
Yeah. So it was, but yes. And so that's the long answer to your short question was, on that day, I mean, I wasn't thinking right then, hey, this is no bad day. Life is amazing. Like when I was getting hauled off, that's not what was going through my mind. At the moment, I was like, am I going to die? And I was asking the images, is this what it feels? Is this what it means to die? Am I dying? I didn't know what was going on. That pain, it was just so excruciating. But I didn't consider any of those days leading up to that as bad. I had so many moments where I was in this horrific pain, and then I would experience this euphoric joy. And so I've been writing a lot about experiencing joy and pain, because if nobody's ever experienced that, it's very real that you don't have to suffer in pain. You don't have to suffer emotionally while you're going through physical pain, that you can literally feel euphoric joy. Like, and I've been there so many times now in my life through this process that it's a very real thing when you choose to believe that everything is conspiring for your benefit, then it frees you. It liberates you from this emotional suffering of why me? Why is this happening? All this stupid crap that goes on in the head, all the negativity. When you choose to flip the thing and say, no, everything, I choose to believe no matter what, and that everything is conspiring for my benefit. You don't necessarily remove the pain, but you remove the suffering. Right. And then you're just free. Your mind is free, and you can be experiencing joy and understand that you're going through this refining experience for a purpose, even if it's you choosing to find the purpose, even if you don't know the purpose, you know?
For purpose. Yes. Well, I know that you said you've dealt with pain and fortunately not had to deal with so much suffering, but wasn't there an event that at least you were used to dealing with the suffering, but in terms of removing the pain, it seemed like there was a switch that was flipped after all the conventional wisdom and medical doctors said, hey, this is going to be around your entire life. Things changed, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of wrap on that previous sentiment, it was like even that day, none of those days did I consider bad. Even that day that I nearly died, like that's just not the way I think about things anymore. It's all happening for my good, everything. And so even if it's painful, even if it seems like it's the worst thing ever, it's just a choice to believe and to trust in the inherent goodness of life. And so what happened after that was I got saved. My life was saved by them removing my whole colon, actually. And then I got an ostomy bag, which just means that anyway, I won't go into details of what that means, but
yeah, people can go to Wikipedia if they
want exactly.
To know.
Uh-huh. But anyway, I'm live. I'm suffering in pain from the standpoint of like, they saved my life, but I'm in a hospital for nearly a month. And then I finally get out of the hospital and I'm in a hospital bed at home with an IV that feeds me all my nutrition because I couldn't digest food and my bowels were just constantly bloated and painful. And finally I went to a naturopathic doctor who basically told me that everything that the Western medicine doctors told me was completely wrong. And he told me what to eat and what not to eat. Specifically, the basics of that being, he told me not to eat sugar, dairy, and wheat. And as soon as I did, like a day later, all of my pain went away and it just completely stopped. And then I've never had any of that bowel pain ever since. And he told me that, yes, I could heal from this, and that, no, this isn't have to be a chronic thing, and that, yes, there are reasons why this stuff happens, and that the medical community is kind of in denial to large extent, or just an ignorance about the reality of why these things are happening or an unwillingness to accept it. Anyway, he showed me what to do, and all my pain went away. I got off all of drugs. Ever since then, I've never had any pain, never had any issues, and don't take any pharmaceutical drugs, and am just completely basically fine, except I don't have a colon anymore because that part was destroyed in the process. But
so it's the anyway. Classic let food be thy medicine, just
yes.
By eliminating dairy, wheat, and
sugar.
Sugar. Wow.
Essentially, yeah. And so, and then he gives me supplements too. Like I take probiotics and I take a lot of vitamins and minerals now because I don't have some of my organs that actually is where you absorb some of that stuff. So anyway, I take a lot of natural supplements and probiotics to help heal the gut and all that. But I don't take any drugs, don't have any negative side effects, and don't have effectively I've healed from the thing, which is supposedly incurable. So after I recovered, I mean, there's a lot more emotional pain in there. I mean, during that process of when I was sick, my son, who was 8 years old, became suicidally depressed. Mm-hmm. And that was a whole another entirely ball game of dealing with the pain, the emotional pain of watching that happen. But he thankfully recovered completely after I recovered. And our whole family kind of just had this renewal and healing. And I went on over the next 3 months after I recovered to write that book, The Positive Thinking Secret, in order to share essentially that message that you get to choose, that you get to decide how you're going to approach every situation, and that you don't have to, I mean, that you get to decide that it's all happening for your good, and that changes everything. Yeah. So
well, I know that's a big, so I promise you we get back to your poster. I want to hit on that real quick. So yeah. this cool poster of yours, these 12 pillars for a truly amazing life, there's a lot of statements that I was looking at it and I was nodding my head vigorously like, yep, totally with you there, Aaron.
Yep.
There's one of them which is super relevant to the themes of this show, and it ends with, by small and simple things are great things brought to pass. I'm curious, what experiences have you had that make you believe that so strongly?
Man, that is like the theme. That's like the foundational theme of everything in my life. I mean, that's what I kind of live by almost more than anything, is that I can take one small step today and make it a habit, and amazing, exponentially big things will happen. And so there's just a ton of them. But just as one recent example, I mean, there's that whole movement with like mini habits that kind of correlates with that sentiment. And where, you know, I just made a commitment to say, do one push-up and one pull-up a day, a small thing, but that I would never miss a day. It's a super small, simple habit. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, then I end up doing multiple sets, you know, 3 or 4 sets of push-ups and pull-ups, and I'm just feeling really good and toned and like fit, you know, over the course of a month. It just makes a humongous difference just to make this little teeny commitment. So that's just one example. I mean, but that's really the principle that I live by on every day, is that I just need to focus on one small thing. And if I can keep myself focused on the top priority, and chunk it down to a really small next step where it's easy to not get overwhelmed and it's easy to just take that action. When I live life that way, everything flows so smoothly and big, amazing things happen. That's actually how I published the book, The Positive Thinking Secret, was I literally focused. I said, every day I will write for 1 hour before doing anything else. I said, that one thing is my only priority. And because I did that, then over 3 months, I had written the book and I was able to publish it, and it's now been read over 300,000 times, and it's like saved lives all over the world. But it happened because of a commitment to that one small, simple thing.
Are there, for people who aren't interested in writing books, you know, I wrote my own book and I'm kind of done with that. one was good for me. I know what that experience is like,
easy.
And among other things. But as far as the simple things go, do you have any suggestions, one or two places, just small, something seemingly insignificant, like so small that it would be ridiculous if you didn't do that? Do you have one or two suggestions for the folks who are listening in terms of something that they can incorporate into their day-to-day life?
Are you just thinking of any type of general habit, any type of general small thing that would have massive impact on a life?
Well, is that the goal? Is that the goal, to do these small and simple things so that they ultimately become ingrained in you, so they just become a part of who you are, what you do, without you having to consciously think or get motivated?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the thing with the reason why small and simple things bring great things to pass is because it's not like doing one small thing one time really has an amazing impact. It's doing small, simple things over like consistently that has the amazing impact. And the basis for that statement, that statement's actually a quote from a scripture, and it's actually in a book called the Book of Mormon. And it's basically the context of that is that this father was telling his son, hey, you need to clean off these plates regularly because they wrote their scriptures. They wrote their words on these golden, they like engraved them into golden plates. And so he said, if you don't clean these things, they will tarnish and these words won't be available for future generations. So, and he says, but if you clean them, they'll be preserved. But it's this small, simple action that causes great things to happen in the future. And so that actual verse came about and is available today because of that principle itself, actually, because the people were taught to clean those things regularly, that just that small action where they didn't see why it would be so important, but in the bigger scheme, the major impact that it had. So I can't remember where I was going with that, but that's kind of the basis of the background of where that statement came from.
No, yeah, I mean that in itself can be a simple thing, is just doing the dishes right away, as opposed to just letting them pile up over days and then having to take a lot more time to get all the crustiness off. Like just being quiet and doing it as a ritual. Leo Babauta talks about this on Zen Habits. I've done it myself, is just seeing the cleaning of your environment or your plates as a service to your family, something that you can offer them, and to do it in kind of a ritualistic way. I love it. I love doing dishes. I know it sounds crazy to a lot of people, but I love that opportunity to provide this service to my family and to preserve the things that we love. You know, the plates that we eat off of are plates that we got for our wedding 10 years ago. Huh. We want to have those plates for 40 years, and they're fantastic. So each time I think about the commitment that I made to Melinda, the commitment that I'm making to my family by doing the dishes and by keeping things clean and by having them be in a place where we can continue to use them and be grateful for them. So yeah. I totally get what you're saying there.
Here's another on that small, simple thing. So it's like, of that poster, there are basically 12 small habits that are what guide my life. The things that I implement, these small things in my life that allow me to live a truly amazing life. And so I'll just give you one other example of like one simple small habit that anybody and everybody could and would benefit from incorporating in their life.
Do it.
And that would just be, I mean, there's a couple of them, but one of them is just the simple habit of gratitude. So waking up each day and when you open your eyes, to literally get yourself into a kind of frenzy of gratitude just by expressing thoughts of gratitude for 5 or 10 things very first thing when you open your eyes. So if you were to start that habit, you know, it's impossible to predict what great things are going to happen from that, but it will change the course of your whole life if you're in the habit of doing that every day. If you start your day every day with just simply getting yourself feeling grateful. And it's not just as enough to just say, thank you for this, 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 and that. If you get into a rote habit of it, that's not nearly as impactful as if you actually get feeling grateful. So saying the things and actually visualizing it and feeling it. If you feel grateful every morning, though, that one simple, small habit, it'll just change the whole course of your day, which will change the whole course of your life because it's ingrained as a habit.
Well, that's in itself is fantastic. I was kind of hoping that you were going to say that the next one was unconditionally show compassion. I know that's one of your 12 pillars.
That is another one.
That unpacking it in itself is big. I still have trouble. Gratitude is something that comes easy to me. Showing compassion, maybe even to my own kids, especially when they're getting just really squirrely and defiant. Yeah. That is hard.
Well, let me tell you what I just got done writing the training or the book on that particular subject this last month, and so the habit on that, the small simple thing that you can do to kind of ingrain that, and what has been super transformational for people, I mean, just this last month, and the feedback that I've been getting from them has been amazing. But this is like one thing you can do is to just begin the habit of saying I love you in your thoughts toward literally everything, like as you're going through the day. Any person you interact, the first thought toward them is I love you. Anything you interact with, the first thought toward that thing is I love you. And it's just this split second thing. It doesn't take any time or anything, but if you get yourself in the habit of the first thought you think out is I love you, it changes your whole interaction with everybody. It puts you in a state of unconditional love. And if you have a hard time thinking that towards somebody, then the habit of being in the habit of doing it will draw attention to that. It'll red flag it. And then you use this statement that's like this, these four sentences called that come from the Ho'oponopono practice, which is kind of a Hawaiian practice of healing and forgiveness. But it's essentially saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. If you say those four sentences whenever you're having a hard time saying I love you, it's like it humbles you. It brings you back to that state. So essentially the simple practice of just deciding that I'm going to start thinking, just thinking the words I love you toward everything, it will transform so many areas of your life. And it'll keep you, like, with your kids, if you were saying that when they're just acting up, if the first thought out of your head is I love you, how would that change, you know, the next word out of your mouth or the next thought? What do you think?
That's a good point. Well, yeah, I'm glad that you brought it up. And saying I love you is a little bit easier than Ho'oponopono.
Ho'oponopono, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That's the Hawaiian word. I remember, actually, we had a conversation when I met you at World Domination Summit 2014. You and me and my two most favorite Josh Beckers in the world, one of Becoming Minimalist fame and the other one of I Simply Am fame, we were having that talk over lunch and you brought up that word. I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. Like all these things wrapped into one.
Yeah.
And I've thought about it ever since. Apparently not enough to pronounce it properly or to make sure that I can do it in my head. But just I have this concept I call leading with I love you, where the people who I do love, whether it's my mom or my wife or my kids, the first thing that I'll say to them when I see them in the morning or when I drop Clark off at my parents' house for hanging out is not, hey, how's it going? It's, I love you. Like leading, not just thinking,
that's
but actually
cool.
Saying, like,
I like
leading
that.
With I love you. I wrote a blog post about this on Value of Simple. I'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Nobody really cared for it, but I thought it was a pretty cool concept. And maybe...
So do you do that a lot? Or
I do, but it's only with the people who I love. If I were to say, even to strangers, I love you, and to feel that and to make it be genuine, I could see how that would radically transform a lot of other thoughts that I have and just completely set the tone for everything that follows and the engagement with someone.
It's amazing when you're going throughout the day, if you just literally... Because thoughts are not just... thoughts are things. Thoughts literally have impact. If you think I love you towards somebody, you're literally blessing their life. You're literally blessing the cells in their body. You're like, you're producing goodness for that person. You're serving them literally by thinking that because you're somehow benefiting them. You can't think a positive, loving statement like that towards somebody without somehow bringing them benefit in some way. It's just like, it's just impossible because there's no thought that doesn't have an effect. So if you're thinking hateful thoughts towards somebody, it's damaging them and damaging you. If you're thinking loving thoughts, it's benefiting them and thus benefiting you because we're all one. But what I was going to say is when you're going through the day, like if I'm going to the post office and I'm in line and my thoughts to the person in front of me are, I love you. And my thoughts to the person serving me, the attendant there are, I love you. It just changes the whole feel of, and I'm producing this positive energy in the area, but
people feel that too.
Yeah.
Like it radiates. It
radiates.
You know it or not.
They feel it whether you know it or not. Even if somebody's being mean to you, if you're saying I love you to them, you'll notice that it dispels it. Or even if it doesn't, it keeps you calm and it has impact. And so if you're in that habit of just everywhere you go, spreading thoughts of love, you are literally just blessing the world and you're making your life amazing because you can't help but feeling good when you're thinking thoughts like that. But you're also doing a massive amount of good for other people. So it's really powerful.
Well, speaking of blessing the world, I mean, it's really cool to talk to somebody like you who's so intentional about their thoughts and you can just craft them just like a fine sculptor would. But I believe you have a blessing, a gift to offer up to Smart and Simple Matters folks. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. Anybody who wants is listening. I'm publishing a series of 12 books, one for each of the 12 pillars of a truly amazing life. And so the first book is called Affirm Your Truth. And it's basically helping you establish, it's a 30-day system to help you establish the habit of affirmations, a couple specific affirmations, but also of, you know, creating your own affirmations of truth in your own life that will really empower you and change your life. And so I've got this system that I've actually had going for a couple of years now. It's really thousands of people have used it and have just had amazing results in their lives from it. And largely it's to help you install the belief in yourself that within your subconscious that everything is conspiring for your benefit. And how, and anyway, I'm going to give that to, away for free to you and your listeners. It's been a service that people have paid for the last couple of years, but I'm just trying to open up the door to more people throughout the world to get access to this powerful training. And as I'm publishing the book this week, as we're talking, by the time people hear this, the book will be published and get it on Amazon and iTunes and whatnot.
But and there'll be links to that in the show notes too. Yeah. There'll be links to Affirm Your Truth. And by the way, this isn't indefinite. I mean, there will be some point in time in the future where if you're listening to Smart and Simple Matters in 2017, this won't be available anymore. We don't expect you to maintain this indefinitely, but yeah, it's just cool for this limited time that
When people buy the book, Affirm Your Truth, in it comes a link where they can sign up for to get the content delivered to their email every day. So it's a 30-day program where once per day there's like a 5-minute message that helps you stay on track for developing this habit. And so that's how the book is set up. But when you buy the book, you can get access to the daily email system as well. But what I'm going to do is just give your listeners the daily email system for free. So if they go to trulyamazinglife.com/Joel, then there's a free link, a free sign up where they can literally just get the 30-day system for free. If they want to go buy the book later as well to have a kind of a permanent record of it, that's great also. But I just want to share that with you guys, share that with your listeners, and hope that it brings value and blesses their life in some way.
Super, super cool, man. I'm grateful for me and on behalf of everybody else. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have a lot of links in the show notes. You've got a lot of really cool things, and it's all on trulyamazinglife.com. We haven't even talked about your podcast, The Truly Amazing Life Show. By the way, episode number 37 with Daphne Clark Hudson blew me away.
Nice.
I'm going to link to that one specifically because it was, man.
She had a powerful story. Huh?
Her story growing up in rural Jamaica, how she empowers others to greatness. Anywho, there'll be lots of links. But if people want to find you more online or what you're doing with Truly Amazing Life, where should they go?
Yeah, just go to trulyamazinglife.com and you can just sign up for my email list. And people that are on my list, they can just email me anytime and I respond to those emails generally. Sometimes not immediately because there may be a backlog, but that's how you get in touch with me. You can get my email there, aaron@trulyamazinglife.com, or sign up to my list. My podcast, my blog, everything's over there on trulyamazinglife.com.
You are cranking it out, and it's all super groovy. I'm really excited to see how these 12 books, The 12 Secrets to a Truly Amazing Life, how this series shapes up. Aaron, it's been awesome. Awesome.
Thanks.
Having you on the show, man.
Yeah, it's been great talking with you. Thanks for having me on, Joel.
All right. I'm betting you got one powerful something, at least one powerful something, probably a lot of somethings out of my conversation with Aaron Kennard of Truly Amazing Life. It's a fact. We all experience pain. Hopefully not from chopping our fingers off or from an exploding colon, but we don't have to experience suffering. I'm super grateful that Aaron's stories and words have helped ease the suffering of countless people, and I'm hoping he's having the same effect on you. Really, it's time to feel grateful, not just be grateful. It's time to make compassion a constant companion, not just something that comes and goes as it pleases. And it's time for me to learn how to better pronounce Hawaiian phrases like ho'oponopono, which I just butchered again. And that means I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, all wrapped into one. Show Aaron some love, will ya, for all he's given us by visiting him at Truly Amazing Life. And don't forget to get his book, Affirm Your Truth, for free for a limited time by visiting trulyamazinglife.com/Joel. You'll find links to all his super sweet stuff and the rest of the resources we offered up in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM071. Now, let me hit you with a couple of quick announcements. Simple Rev 2015 tickets are available as of early April 2015, and the gathering is going down in Minneapolis, Minnesota on October 2nd and 3rd at the McNamara Alumni Center. Joshua Becker, he's going to be in the house along with Simple Rev newcomers like Mark and Angel Chernoff, Farnoosh Brock, Donnie McClurkin. That's just the start of it, folks. You can get a whole lot more context and score your own ticket at simplerev.com/tickets. Also, I just published my first edition of a new series on Value of Simple that I'm calling The Experience Curator. It's a periodic series giving you the most fascinating, exceptional, or fun moments from 5000 BCE through today. That's not all that humble of a claim. I got a feeling I'm backing it up on this one, though. The first edition features the crucial difference between common and normal, an inspiring origin story from rural Jamaica, which you may have gotten a hint about during this episode, Tony Robbins high-fiving Al Gore, a hilarious story about something you probably thought was extinct. No, not dinosaurs, the butt dial, and a whole lot more. I actually created a category on Value of Simple for the Experience Curator, and you can find the first and future editions at valueofsimple.com/theexperiencecurator, all one phrase. How often and how long I'll keep it up totally depends on the input that I get from you, because I told you this before, I'm going to tell you again, I don't do Smart and Simple Matters, Experience Curating, Simple Rev, or any of these other things primarily for me. I do it, and I'm serious, I do it for you. If you want to let me know how I'm doing with the podcast or anything else, maybe let me know what you want more of, less of, with, of course, a small exception for a consistent and healthy dose of obscure music, movie, or 1980s pop culture references. Send me an email. I'm at joel@valuesimple.com. You can get yo Twitter on with a tweet to @JoelZislowski, or tell me in person after I give you a hug at Simple Rev 2015. Remember, folks, your friends and family, they are counting on you to share the good stuff you experience with them, and that hopefully includes this Smart and Simple Matters dealio. You are a model for everyone around you. So let's show the world, let's finally show them why the simple, slow, intentional, and downright funky fresh authentic life is such an amazing one. Thanks a ton for your love and support. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zislowski, creator of All Things Value of Simple.